The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
Welcome to Thought Crime Radio. We are the voices for the human rights of babies. I'm Janelle.
And I'm Rich.
And we're in downtown Columbia, Missouri at KOPN 89.5. This week is our winter fun drive to raise money to keep us on the air.
Yes, babies don't have much money, I'm afraid. And so they rely on the goodwill of the listener to try to help fill in the information gap, which is huge in the society.
So KOPN is a community radio. We are totally funded, mostly funded, I'll say mostly funded, by our listeners, mm-hmm. and our listeners are our members, and they're part of the KOPN family.
Been on the air for, 37 years?
35, I think. 35, something like that, yeah. In fact, they have some incentive gifts for that you can, if you add so much money to your gift, you'll get some incentive for the 35 years that we've been on the air. And we do have people in the green room on the phone if you want to call and make a donation. Locally in the 573 area code, the number is 874-5676. That's 874. I want to go real slow because if you're in your car, I want you to be able to get this number. 5676.
That stands for KOPN, by the way.
And if you are in Missouri but outside the 573 area code, you can call 800-895-7676.
Sorry. 89.5.
5676.
KOPN.
I was just testing you. And if you're outside of Missouri, you can call the 573 number. And again, that's 874-5676.
Or you could use the PayPal link on the website, kopn.org.
And it's a secure link, so you can be sure that your money's going to be safe.
Except from the NSA, of course.
Yeah. So you, Rich, have been here a long time. I've only been with KOPN for a couple of years as a volunteer, but you're the man here. You help keep the station going. What's the importance of this station to our local community and even we know that our show is very unique. You can't hear a show like this anywhere else.
That's for sure.
We think in the world, and we know in the country. So we have listeners from all over the country and all over the world.
If you look at, listen to some of the archival tapes in the studio up here, you will find history-making stuff dealing with, this station was talking about history in the making at a time when history was still being, history is still being suppressed, of course. What I'm saying is that nowadays, the things this station was talking about and was being poo-pooed in the major media are now a matter of history, accepted historical fact. There's no way that any person with some understanding of recent history can believe that the standard commercial media can be relied on to tell us what's going on in the world. And unfortunately, the things that impact us and the things that we impact are not within our sensory realm. Our tax dollars go to pay for wars halfway around the world, and decisions made in Washington impact our pocketbooks. So it's essential that we know something about what's going on. And the major media is not telling us.
And this is one of the stations where you can get the truth about what's going on. There are all kinds of programs during the day, the national programming, like Democracy Now!, where you'll hear versions of the goings-on that you don't hear in the mainstream.
Yes. But, concerning this show in particular, I don't think there's any other radio show in the world that I know of that systematically deals with the experience of newborn children and how it impacts people for life via the standard, well-accepted phenomenon of imprinting, which is widely accepted to occur in the animal world but hardly ever recognized to occur in the human realm.
Yeah, and beyond us talking a lot about the... That's okay. I'm all wrapped up in my cord. Speaking of birth trauma.
Oh, God. You have to clamp this thing.
Don't you clamp my cord. Oh, my goodness. It is wrapped around the chair. Yeah. I am stuck in my chair. Oh. Isn't that funny?
We need a video camera in here.
No, we don't. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, we talk a lot about the impact of birth, and we're always trying to connect the dots and take it to the huge, bigger picture that a lot of people really are blown away by and question us, and some people go, oh, that's amazing, I never thought of that. But, you know, what's happening in the world today is a result of birth. The things that we don't like, the things that we want to get rid of, the things that we want to change about ourselves, about our community, about
our society,
our country.
Not just this society either. This is a worldwide problem. There are places in the world where babies, believe it or not, the obstetrical standard for dealing with male babies, specifically male babies for some reason, in Georgia and in Asia, is to tie them down. Tie newborn boys.
He's emphasizing that because my
she's still tied down here. she can't seem.
I just undid my cord all by myself.
Oh my! Okay.
Okay. It was wrapped right under the chair.
They tie babies, little boys down, newborn boys, to an inclined, some kind of inclined bed, and catheterize them and keep them in that position for months, strictly as a matter of convenience for. Who knows who? I mean, certainly not the baby. This is so standard, such a standard procedure in Georgia that it is widely understood that Georgian men have a flat spot on the back of their heads because they are laying in a prone position during a time when their heads are calcifying, their cranial plates are calcifying. Mm-hmm. And also Georgian men are known for their aggression and violence. So, gee, I don't think there's a connection there, do you?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, how could there not be? Yeah. How could there not be a connection between how we come into this world and how we live in this world? There's plenty of research.
It's just imprinting. That's all it is. This is not rocket science we're talking about here.
You know, I've had a couple of interactions on the... on Facebook with people because I'm pretty outspoken. I have a lot of colleagues from around the world, and I'm pretty outspoken about what I believe and what I know and what I think I know and about babies. And people really get jiggy about hearing that birth impacts us for life. And it's really, really a profound concept. And I'm really, really happy today to have a guest with us who is one of my colleagues. He's from Colorado, and he was in my Castellino birth training program for 2 years back in the early part of the 2000s. And we both have studied this, and I'm really looking forward to having him share with us how it is on the nervous system level that we remember what happens to us and we act it out. We behave according to how we've perceived the world. Yeah. And he's a trainer. He has developed a protocol called settling that helps us, whether it's circumcision, birth trauma, you know, you're an Iraq vet, you've been in a car wreck, you've been raped, you know, you've been through a violent relationship, any of those kinds of traumas that we know cause
C-section,
post-traumatic stress disorder, C-section for the baby and the mother.
Mm-hmm.
This is a technique that you can use to settle your own nervous system so that you can heal, because talk and drugs and surgery do not heal the experiences that were traumatic to us.
Yeah, when you say remember, you're talking about something that's physiological as much as mental, right? I mean, you're talking about
it is physiological
processes in the body which are affected.
We remember in our visceral.
Yeah, right.
We don't remember in our head.
Our head
deceives us.
Yeah. Our neural system pervades every extremity of our bodies, and contains ganglia and all kinds of structure that is ignored routinely when people think about memories and psychology. Mm-hmm.
And our guest will help us mm-hmm. sort out some more of this. We've been talking about this for a long time, and I think it's hard for people say to me all the time, it couldn't have impacted me, it couldn't have impacted my baby, because we're just fine, and we are just fine, and it impacts us. And so we are constantly talking about this, and I'm looking forward to having him on. His name is Gary Peterson, and he is the founder of the STAR Institute. And if you have access to your computer, you might want to pull up that website. It's the starinstitute.org.
.us.
Oh, sorry, .us.
Mm-hmm.
And he is in Colorado, and he has a place in Ohio. And anything else that we need to say about the station? I don't see the phone answerers out there working hard. If you want to support our program and support our radio station that supports free speech, you can call and make a donation, and the number is 573-874-5676. I'm usually not really good about asking for money and going out there, but
yeah.
KOPN is one of the things that I am so proud of being a part of, and so much support. I mean, it's one of the gems of Columbia, and if you live in Columbia and you know that, you know how important this is to our community. And if you are around the world, you know how important our little community is to your bigger community, and we really hope that you'll show your support by calling in and making a donation. And again, the number is 573-874-5676.
Or 1-800-895-5676.
That's if you're in Missouri, but outside the 573.
Right.
Or you can donate securely on our website at kopn.org. So are we ready to switch gears?
I wanted to mention one thing about this show in particular.
Okay.
Unless you've listened to the entire series, the drawback to this stuff that we're talking about is that it's so huge. There are so many different facets to this. And the abuse, the child abuse that goes on in obstetrical wards is so pervasive that, you know, each show is only one small facet of the overall issue. And if you really want to understand the gravity of the situation, you need to get on our website, thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com, and look at the links, especially the links for Janelle and I, Rich. Munchausen Obstetrics is a good introduction to the issue. And it's not complete.
There's and look at the videos, too, of the babies being circumcised. And ask yourself, really, do these babies not feel? How can you look at this baby who's just retching and fighting and crying from the depths of him and say this baby doesn't remember this and it won't impact him?
You know, if you apply standard adult human rights to what they do to babies, you'll see that it's just not defensible. You know, if babies are human beings, if babies have the same rights as adults, and no adult would consent to this kind of assault on his or her body, then you know there's something seriously wrong.
Well, and if he does, it's his choice. And that's part of the problem, is that babies don't have a choice. When parents, when adults are conceiving and gestating and laboring and birthing babies, our society is not aware that this is a baby, this is a soul coming into a body, and this being also has rights and has needs. You're not just, when you decide to induce a baby or induce a woman, you're not just inducing the woman, you're inducing the baby. If you do a non-necessary cesarean, you're putting a baby through an experience that is not necessary, and we know.
And it's also not it's something that nature has not provided for. Nature has programmed the female body and the baby, you know, to cooperate in this process of birth. And assuming millions of years of evolution are to be trusted, this is an optimal scenario, producing optimal human beings. Cut into a woman to get out a baby, or cut off pieces of a little boy's, you know, body, you're making a huge assumption there about that far exceeds anyone's understanding.
Well, the whole experience of hospital birth and even some of the home births where people intrude upon the woman is a violation of that. But what you're talking about, and we talk about this a lot, this eons of people being able to give birth, we didn't have doctors and nurses years ago. There's a physiological, natural aspect to birth. And I think that what I'm going to bring Gary on here in a few seconds, because I want to get him in on this part of the conversation. Start out here, because in the cranial sacral work, we work with an inherent blueprint for health. The assumption is, and it's from the osteopathic field, that there is a blueprint for health, that there's a higher self, a higher physician, and the being, the body, the person knows what it needs, and it's a blueprint for health, and I think this is really, really important for even midwives to get, because when you get this, then you are able to sit with a labor and not feel the panic and not have to do something, because that's what happens. People aren't in touch with their own nervous system, so they want to do something to fix, and they're fixing the person that they're engaging with rather than themselves. So what you were talking about is very connected to this inherent blueprint for health. So I'd like to bring Gary on. Are you there, Gary?
Hi, Janelle. Hi, Rich.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing, Gary?
Boy, is it nice to hear your voice.
Doing well. Good to hear your voice, too. I've been listening to your early comments, and I couldn't agree more, and I'm really eager to chime in a little bit.
Go for it.
Well, if I could just take off a little bit on one of the last things you said, Janelle, about the nature of the soul in the evolution of a person. And I think this part is really, really missed badly in the medical world and the scientific world, that so many people have been able to see this, and people who work with babies get such a wonderful example of a higher consciousness coming into form. But we don't sort of standardize this in our culture. It's sort of on the fringe of understanding in our culture, whereas from my point of view, it really needs to be in the center of our understanding. The Tibetans are pretty good about this. They consider babies to be their teachers, and they really do some pretty incredible preparation for having a baby. A man and a woman will often do a lot of cleansing, will do emotional work on themselves, on their relationship, and that to me would be the ideal for all of us as we educate people, especially young people who are of childbearing age, that having a baby is really quite a unique experience in terms of bringing consciousness into the world, bringing a level of consciousness, we could say, from another realm, like Pierre Teilhard de Chardin has described so well, that we're actually spiritual beings having a human experience. And our early trauma, sadly to say, our early trauma sort of capsulizes our consciousness into a pretty small bandwidth of experience, whereas the potential of our originality is really quite huge. And that part, to me, is not only ironic, but very, very tragic.
Yeah, we go into defense mode, right? I mean, if we're assaulted at birth, that sets a template for believing that the entire universe is hostile, and that we
have
to... That's
really, really accurate. You know, Joseph Chilton Pierce has a great description of this. He says that early on, we sort of have two options as parents and birth caregivers, whether we be medical people or doulas or midwives. Whatever our relationship is to the little baby, our own particular consciousness and our embodied consciousness, meaning how we allow our consciousness to affect our nervous system, can influence babies in one of two very, very striking ways. And the ideal way would be that we can help babies to start to wire their own nervous system towards their consciousness, their originality, their curiosity, really the sort of optimum end. The other alternative is not so desirable. In fact, it's pretty tragic, and that's that that we can help babies to wire towards defensiveness. So I'd like to just paint a little picture for myself and for anybody who's listening. As you're listening now, imagine that you are listening through a hearing aid, that you're looking through artificial eyes, that you are walking on crutches, that you've had organ transplants, that basically what you take to be yourself is actually sort of secondhand equipment, that you are, in my words, you're functioning from a compensatory system. And really this is what happens with babies. The originality, which is so powerful and so potent, gets short-circuited really early on, and then from that point on, much of our development is really about compensation. It's about developing a survival mechanism rather than a thrival mechanism. And the two are obviously really quite different.
Right. You want to speak more to that thrival mechanism?
Sure. Love to. Yeah, in the work that I do, and Janelle has referred to, and I know that she does it as well, the history of our work as craniosacral therapists goes back to a primary person in the development of this work, a man by the name of Dr. William Sutherland. And Sutherland, over about a 50-year clinical career, had some amazing insights. And one of them, about 30 years into his work, he noticed in working with people and putting his hands on people's bodies, doing manipulative work, he noticed that at a certain point, the client was laying on the table, the client was in a pretty relaxed mode, sort of half asleep, and Sutherland had this revelation, and the revelation was that he was looking with his curiosity into, we could say, into the totality of this person. And then he noticed that some level of intelligence was looking back at him, that there was within this person something much, much more than the intellect that is on board at all times. And when he had this revelation, he eventually started to refine his understanding of it, and he began to see that this larger inner intelligence could be palpated or touched or felt. And this gave rise to his understanding of what do you call the tides, or very, very subtle body rhythms, which you can feel if you are able to quiet yourself and get fairly relaxed and fairly calm. You can start to palpate a whole level of our physiology that is way, way below the radar, of what modern medicine can palpate. And these tides, from my standpoint, are really the baseline for our physiology. Without these tidal motions, these very, very slow rhythms of expansion and contraction, we, to put it plainly, we don't exist. These tides are, as Sutherland described it, the breath of life. And these tides are a way to allow, I think, consciousness to be embodied and incarnated on a moment-to-moment basis in the day-to-day, moment-to-moment working of our body and our life. So what's critical here is that babies are extremely aware of these tidal motions. Babies are very somatic, or body-centered, body-oriented. And if you put your hands, if you're a practitioner, and you can put your hands on a baby and start to palpate the physiology of a baby, you'll start to notice this tidal motion right away. And it's slow and spacious and luxurious and wonderfully expressive of health. So Sutherland started to coin some terms, and one of them that really got sort of refined over time from other practitioners and other students was that that we have within us an inherent health, something within us that is beyond all of the conditions of our experience, beyond any level of suffering, any level of pain, any level of pathology, that there is this soul expression or this spiritual expression which is actually embodied and incarnated. And this health is always greater than the pathology. And I want to bring this in because it is easy when we're talking about the suffering of babies to lean heavily into the pathology. And it's certainly there. We can't deny that babies are badly mistreated in many, many situations, and that all around the world there is this incredible early traumatization of babies. But the good news is that with some degree of early intervention, or even later intervention, really the timing, earlier the better, but whenever in the lifespan of a person this intervention can happen, then this quality of inherent health can be brought into the foreground. And with babies, they are so responsive to this experience that it makes pretty immediate changes in terms of resolving the effects of trauma and stress and any sorts of imprints from conception to prenatal life into birth and early neonatal life. So inherent health, I want to put that out there. We're inherently whole. We have a direct and unbroken connection to our source. And the tragedy is that birth trauma sort of obscures all of this. Our own sense of our original self gets obscured. Our connection to our source gets obscured. And then from then on, we're working with a sort of shadow self. We're working with compensatory behaviors, compensatory mechanisms for survival. And we lose the picture of our potential.
We lose connection with our bodies. Our minds lose connection with our bodies. And you know, all this traumatization leads to dissociation.
Dissociation is a big part of what happens, and babies are really skillful at dissociating. Dissociation in the short term isn't a bad thing, really. It's the most natural response to trauma. Trauma is so overwhelming, and it creates such a horrific felt sense in the body, such a sense of absolute rage and terror, not just anger and fear, but anger and fear times 10, times 100. So by leaving, by dissociating, we find a way out of that. And the long-term effect, however, isn't so great. Our body's physiology suffers from long-term dissociation. And so babies who are already coming in a very vulnerable state, a state of being, spiritual beings that are trying to learn how to have a human experience. And if we as the welcoming committee are not responsive to the nature of what a baby is, and David Chamberlain describes it very, very well. Dr. Chamberlain says that babies are very little beings having incredibly huge levels of intelligence. So that's the paradox with a baby. We look at a baby, and it's easy to objectify them and look at them as something that is maybe a little bit unawakened is a little bit asleep, doesn't really have intelligence because it doesn't have developed verbal skills and intellect. All of that is the recycling of traumas that, that, as you said so earlier, so well earlier, that they get perpetuated. So if we are thinking about a doctor, a nurse, or a midwife, or a doula, anybody who's working with babies, one of the prerequisite skills, to, in my way of thinking, is that birth caregiver, has that person been able to work on their own birth trauma so that they can differentiate their own experience and not repeat it? Because it's so clearly evidenced in all the research that if a baby's been treated poorly, if a baby has been abused, then the baby will be an abuser. It's just a natural response to the level of abuse that happens to us when we're little.
And that abuse that we see happening at the moment of birth, most of our society doesn't see that as abuse. I mean, we can watch people looking at a baby like loved ones. A father and a mother will be there in the moment of their birth, and the caregivers can be quite violating. And people looking on will be smiling and oohing and aahing. It's like we're so oblivious to the grand being there, and how important gentle, kind touch sounds are for the baby.
Yeah, it's like it's not like the baby is a lesser human being. It's the baby is beyond our understanding, really. Yeah.
That's a great way to put it, Rich. I think if we could teach people that, and people could have a deep respect for babies as teachers, as little bodies with huge levels of consciousness, then something could really change in the way that we relate to babies. And there are, you know, as I said, in very scattered parts of the world, that level of respect and awareness does exist, but it really is the very small minority, not at all the majority.
Could we define, could you define for us when you say consciousness? Because I'm not sure, you know, we all have different sort of...
Well, it is a bit of a semantic, you know, there's a glitch there, because generally the way that science has been reductionist and mechanistic, we think of consciousness pretty much as equated with intellect. So if somebody says, I have consciousness, most people are going to make the assumption that that means that they have intellect, that they're awake, that they're aware, that they're cognitive, they're capable of speech and other cognitive function. But consciousness really is a spectrum. Just like if you had a lamp with a dimmer switch, a lamp with a rheostat, we could take that lamp and turn it on very, very lightly and have just a dim amount of light, and gradually sort of increase the amount of uptake on the switch, and then the light gets brighter and brighter and brighter. And that's a pretty fair metaphor for consciousness. Within that whole spectrum of light of a lamp that has a dimmer switch, intellect is pretty small on the spectrum. And that's a little bit of a blow to our egos, I think, because we pride ourselves on our intellect. We are very, very agendized, very attached to our intellectual development. And that actually sort of recycles part of the problem, because we can have very, very great technicians in a hospital system, even really good people in alternative birthing, doulas and midwives and so on, lactation consultants. But a lot of the work is being done from an intellectual level, and one of the first sort of principles in working with the baby is you have to drop below that to actually be of service to the baby in a way that the baby can relate to. You have to settle your own nervous system and drop into what we could almost call a witness space, a place that you are present, extremely present, and also very quiet within yourself, not agitated, not having an agenda. And then from that place, you sort of tune into the level of consciousness that a baby has. And it's a slow process. You watch them for their cues. You are very respectful. You thank them for coming in. Franklin Sills, my cranial teacher, a brilliant technician working with babies, a brilliant therapist, has some great tips for being with a baby. And one of them is that we don't understand that as a spiritual being, one of the main things that a baby is doing, it's one of its purposes, which was our purpose when we came into a body, was, and I want to say this and not make it sort of trite, but that a baby is coming to bring love and to have love reflected back at them. And so that's often lost in the early experiences that babies have. A mother who is heavily anesthetized, dissociated from her own body, from her own experience, can have all of that in her intention, and then it sort of goes out the window when she when anesthesia takes over, when her own trauma of perhaps the surgical intervention takes over during the birth. So that very intimate relationship to love can be cast into the sidelines, and babies are looking for that.
Can you explain how that impacts us for life? Because that's something that I have found recently that really bothers people. They don't want to think about how that impacts the baby, the drugs, the separation.
Well, it all if it isn't intervened, if the imprinting is really all around the separation and the anesthesia and the medical surgical interventions, if that's the imprinting that is the main formative for the baby's development, then certainly the baby is going to develop a very compensated system. And their sympathetic nervous system especially is going to be pretty high activated, which means that they will be responding in a couple different ways. They may, as John Bowlby discovered, they may characteristically be pointed towards aggression, and that would be more common for a male baby, for a boy, or they may be pointed towards depression, which would be more common for a girl. And so there you have two sort of major behavioral tragedies that could really come out of early birth imprinting if it isn't able to be resolved early on.
And
resolution is really possible. No matter what was done to a baby in terms of imprinting, babies are so resilient and so very plastic. It's a word from neurobiology that their development has great flexibility. If that imprinting can be met in a skillful way, in a loving way, and resolved, then babies are pretty quick to let go of those early imprints. But if those imprints aren't met and resolved, then those imprints become the fertilizer that babies grow in. Traumas, as you described so well early in your show, that those traumas become the sort of touchstones that babies come back to again and again and relate to the world from. They relate to the world from a place of aversion, ambivalence, fear, hostility, and so on, because that's experiences they had right at the beginning.
So we need to take a break.
Great.
And yeah, so you had mentioned before the midwives, doctors, doulas, how they need to do their birth work, and you mentioned before how ideally if a couple can prepare for birth. So I know that you're talking about even healing their own birth. And so after our break, I was wondering if you could talk about, and you mentioned also that the babies they resolve it quickly. And what I have found is that the baby can only resolve as much as the parents have dealt with as well, because sometimes their stuff is keeping the baby from healing. And I wondered if you could talk about what a doctor, share with us what a womb surround is. What would it look like for an adult to heal their birth trauma, the experience, the protocol? Is that possible?
I'd be happy to talk about any of that. So
let
me know when you're ready to get started again.
Okay, so we're going to let our listeners know again that we're listening to Thought Crime Radio, where the voices for the human rights of babies on KOPN 89.5. And Rich is
alone in the world. That's just us. You only hear us on this station. If you think this is important stuff, I mean, just strictly from an economic perspective, think of how important this is. We're talking about the foundation for criminality, addiction,
war,
domestic abuse, war, just the general state of suffering.
Not to mention all the physiological stuff like diabetes, stroke.
Right.
All the things that come from having your cord blood taken from you when your cord's cut immediately, and the drugs and all that.
So strictly from an economic viewpoint, this station is well worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, they let us on here to talk about this.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. So if you want to support KOPN and you haven't done so, I think we've only got a day. Is this the last day?
I think so.
I mean, we always take money, but if you want to be a part of our pledge drive, you could call 573-874-5676.
And if you would like to be thanked on the radio, please let us know.
And for a minimum donation of $50, you can get a pair of tickets to the Ragtag Cinema here in Columbia if you're here locally. And the Ragtag Cinema champions independent film and other media arts to stimulate and enrich the culture of our community. Ragtag is a 501c3 nonprofit community-supported theater that showcases a variety of films and performing arts in a vibrant, inviting setting. So when you call with your pledge of $50 or more, please let the person who takes your call know that you'd like a pair of tickets for the Ragtag Cinema. The Ragtag is another one of the gems of Columbia.
And Jimmy John Subs has donated 10 pairs of gift certificates. 10 pair of gift certificates, good for 2 free subs. These gift
subs are shoes.
Sorry?
Sorry. Oh, sorry.
Okay. These gift certificates can be picked up for a donation of $50. And for a donation of $50, you can get you can get a 1-pound bag of coffee from Z-Best Coffee. The coffee is available for pickup here at the station. Call now while supplies last. Z-Best Coffee is made from beans that are barrel roasted daily by custom order in small batches to ensure the highest quality coffee. If you're interested in one pound bag of Z-Best Coffee, please tell the person who takes your call when you call in your pledge of $50 or more.
If $50 is a lot today, I know everybody is hurting and everybody has financial concerns, but $50 is not very much for what you get when you donate to this station and help keep us on the air, because we are the people who run the boards and do the programs are all volunteers, and we have a skeleton crew of people, and we survive. I hear a phone ringing, but I don't think it's
not mine.
Anyway, for $50, it's a very good contribution. It goes a long, long way, and it's greatly appreciated. And the number again is 573-874-5676.
Or 1-800-895-5676 if you're in Missouri outside of the 573 area code. Or KOPN.org. Click the PayPal pledge button and join the community of conscious people in this world, the ever expanding community of people who are waking up to what's going on around them.
Yeah, we're really hoping that our community will start to wake up to this need that we're talking about to treat babies, as our guest Gary Peterson has been telling us about. So let's get back to our guest, and we were going to talk about the womb surround and the process of an adult healing their birth trauma. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, yay. So, where do we start?
What does this process look like?
The womb surround is, in a way a metaphor, but it's also very real. The baby coming into the world is, as I said before, extremely vulnerable in most ways that are worldly, very, very gifted in many other ways that are less worldly, more transcendent. So one of the problems that a baby has coming in is that a baby is changing its state. It's moving from a state of, we could say, non-material consciousness into very embodied consciousness. And that happens pretty quickly for a baby after it's been born, and especially after the cord has been cut. So in that transition into the world, the baby is very susceptible to needing to merge into the physiological, the emotional, the mental field of the parents as a biological imperative. In other words, to survive, the baby has to a certain degree, move into the domain of the parents. And depending on the nature of that domain, if it's as Frank Lake said, Dr. Lake was really one of the early people, along with John Bowlby in England, to take Freud's work and Winnicott and Fairbairn's work and refine it into a greater understanding of how to be with little ones. But as Dr. Lake said, if babies can have a good enough surround, if the environment that babies come into is not perfect, which it never will be, of course, but if it's good enough, then babies will know that the love that they're bringing has been received and it's being reflected back to them. And they can, the totality of that baby can more or less settle into a state of comfort within its environment. And that's the sort of critical part of the surround, is that if a mom and a dad can have settled their nervous system and be slow in their pacing and present and working and living in present time and orienting to each other and to the baby, then the baby really gets it on all levels that the baby's in a secure place. And this is really the sort of foundation for what's called secure bonding and attachment, that if the baby can come in and feel protection and nurturance and support and love, and the baby's pretty good. That's a pretty good landing for the baby. So the womb surround is an experience for adults to simulate that experience which may have been missed when they were babies, which is a small group of people, usually somewhere in the range of 4 to 6 or maybe 7 people at the most, with a skilled facilitator. And the experience is that the surround of people, the group of people, will create a support background or support environment for one person at a time to very gently start to explore what some of the imprints of their own birth might have been. And the idea of the surround is to be as absolutely supportive as possible. And the people who are not working at the moment, each person gets about a 2 to 3 hour period of time to process for their own experience. And the other people who are on the sidelines, so to speak, are the surround. They're actually forming the support. They're sort of playing out or simulating the experience of being a good enough environment, a loving, caring, supportive environment that the person can rest into. And in my work with settling, one of the pieces that I've been really interested in is how in our society we become so sympathetically oriented or so sort of overactivated in our nervous system that we actually don't have a felt sense or a body sense of support. And we start to look for support in various sort of truncated ways. Obviously, many, many people in our society medicate heavily in various ways. Alcohol, drugs, gambling, sex, shopping, overeating, the list goes on and on. So the womb surround is actually an opportunity for people to have a felt sense or body sense of, relaxing deeply into the feeling of support that goes to the level of letting your more interior muscles, your more intrinsic muscles relax. So you become sort of a jellyfish, much like a baby, which is sort of like a jellyfish too. Babies are very, very fluid. And as I said, very slow in their tidal motions. So in the womb surround, there's this opportunity to have a very direct and immediate experience in present time with something that may have been missed way back then when you were being born, which is the good enough feeling of support that allows you to know that you're loved and protected and that you've made a safe landing.
And then the experience of that will allow your brain, your nervous system, to wire that in, so that you have that as your imprinting as well, a new imprint.
Exactly. And it's been shown in numerous studies from every level of neurobiology into alternative healing and beyond that that experience shapes us. what we experience in the stimulation from the sensory motor field, it basically molds us. It is the architect of our development. So if we have had an early series of not so successful experiences, and from that we've developed aversions and defense strategies and survival strategies that have limited our experience in the world, then the possibility of sort of redoing that is pretty high, actually. And birth process is one way to go about that. My own take on birth process is that it really, really works even better when there can be quite a bit of a body connection that accompanies the birth process. So when I do what's called a womb surround workshop or a birth process workshop, I try to let the person who's working at the time have their time to do some processing and be supported in that, but also after that to lie very still on a massage table while somebody holds them in a craniosacral mode and allows their nervous system to get really, really quiet. Because what we've found is that in what we call stillness is sort of the optimum place for new wiring to happen. That if your nervous system is still activated in some way, then the new wiring is going to be a little bit more jumbled. But if you can go into a very deep resting state, again, which the state that we would call stillness, then the new wiring can be optimized. And I've seen that happen quite a bit with people, either in these birth surrounds or womb surrounds, or in one-on-one sessions, whether they be babies with immediate birth issues or adults that have a history of birth imprint.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I wanted to ask you about the individual sessions. People can also do this individually with a therapist who's trained to do this as well as in a group, right?
It's really true. And I think just from a humanistic standpoint, from the standpoint of a human being on the planet, I want to say that one of the ways that birth imprinting and its impact is so prevalent in society is that as we look around, we see people who become very, very fixated in a number of ways. And this would include certainly all of us who work in any caregiving profession. We really become overreactive to our own fears. And then these fears play out in sort of bureaucratic and institutional ways. And I think one of the sadnesses and tragedies about this is that therapists and caregivers often lose their humanity. We become so fearful of liability, professional fault, whatever it might be called, that we sort of tie our hands to step forward with our heart and open ourselves to the wonderful experience of being with another person in a healthy therapeutic way. So these womb surrounds really are a lot about that. They're a way that people can re-experience a coming into the world, a sort of re-entry into the world, a repatterning that has all of those sort of optimal elements, love and compassion, nurturance, protection, and a little bit at a time, which is really the very best way to let a nervous system decompress itself. The old imprinting can be discharged and in our language can be titrated. Titration is a word from chemistry. It means that two elements that are averse to each other, if they're brought together slowly and a little bit at a time, they actually can come into equilibrium. And that's really the key word for working with trauma at any level, whether it be birth trauma or later trauma, is that things slow down so that the nervous system can discharge a little bit at a time the back pressure or compression from earlier events. And when that happens in a setting like a womb surround or in a one-on-one session with a skilled therapist, then the changes can be really quite dramatic for a person.
It's amazing. It's amazing work. We're running out of time, as we always do, and we had to cut you shorter this time because of our fun drive, but there's so much to talk about. I think we have time. It's sort of a theme of our show. We always address circumcision as part of the language of birth, because so many young males are circumcised shortly after their birth. And I wondered if you could talk about the healing of circumcision, because we've talked about it so much over the last few months, and I think men really need to have some hope that as they're coming to awareness about the brutality of what happened to them, that they can experience healing
and what was lost.
And what was lost. And maybe that would be talking about your settling a little bit more in your book, and we're sort of rushing here, but we do have about 3 minutes for you to pull all that together for us.
Well, I'll give you a little elevator statement. You know, elevator statement is like a 20-second blurb. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like I've got a couple minutes, and I can say specifically about circumcision that as a male in our society who was circumcised, the impacts on me for a long time were very, there was certainly trauma from that experience. And in a larger way, all of these imprints, circumcision being one of them from my birth, anesthesia being another, separation from my mother, I could go on a pretty long laundry list, but what I want to emphasize is that, and I can't speak so specifically to circumcision when I say this, but in a very general way, that health is never lost. And I think that's the main thing I want to say, that within us, obscured from our current consciousness due to our traumas, but very much like a sun that's behind a bank of clouds, is this incredible inherent health and wholeness. And as we start to touch into that, then the specifics of our traumas become less impactful. The specifics start to fade away, as Peter Levine said. Levine is a trauma expert here in Colorado. And he said it doesn't really matter if we remember what the specific traumas were, if we can heal their effects in our nervous system. And our nervous system plays back those effects in terms of intensity, urgency, compression, the feeling of a compressed space, the compression of time. So slowing things down within ourselves on a moment-to-moment basis is what my settling work is about. And probably by midsummer, I'll have my first book out. It'll be called Settling, Simple Practices for Calming Your Nervous System. And I'd love to come back on your show sometime and talk more about this whole topic.
We'd love to have you back. And I'd also love to have you come here and do a womb surround, sponsor you to come here.
Well, I'd like to talk to you about that too. Then maybe at some point we can consider that as a possibility.
Yeah. And
but for everybody who's listening, I want to say thank you so much for your interest in this topic and for your own commitment to working with people who have had any sort of birth trauma. The possibility of healing is always there, and let's just get after it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being with us, Gary Peterson from the StarInstitute.us, right?
That's right.
That's
Thanks.
Right.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rich and Janelle.
And this is Janelle and
Rich
for Thought Crime Radio. We're the voices for the human rights of babies. We appreciate you listening, and we hope that you'll make your pledge for KOPN.
So that you can continue to hear this kind of stuff that you won't hear anywhere else.
Bless you, and we'll see you next week.